You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Rob Carson. I'm with you all week. If you want to join me, 1-800-922-6680. Coming up later this hour, Brianna Lyman will be joining us from the Federalist. We're going to talk about national election integrity efforts. And also, I have a podcast. I'm going to be putting the new one up. It's the raw video is up on YouTube, and you can watch it if you want to today, and I'll clean it up. And the audio will be available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Just look for Mary Walter Radio on any of those. And last night, my guest was attorney David Gelman, and we talked a lot about free speech versus protesting in these examples, was what's going on in these campuses, and also some of what's going on in the Trump trials. You know, what's happening in the courtrooms and questions that I had about whether something is legit or not. So, all right, I want to play this. This is a little bit long, but I thought it was interesting because just put yourself, and this was on Twitter, and a woman, Steph Vox, said, a parent at UCLA gave me permission to release this audio of her phone call with UCLA Police Department as they described the school's directive to allow protesters to restrict the movement of Jewish students. Now, this mother has a son on campus who is Jewish. Imagine, being a parent and having a kid who's Jewish on one of these school campuses, right? Even if my kids weren't Jewish, I would have pulled my kids out. That would have been it. Give me my money back. We're done. And if you don't want to give me my money back, I'm suing you. That's it. I would not be playing games with this. But here it is. This is cut 7. And here's the audio of this parent talking to campus police, trying to get some answers.
They said because he's Jewish, he cannot enter that area, and that they won't issue him a wristband.
So that wasn't a university thing. That's probably the protesters that are out there.
Right. So are the protesters allowed to not allow a student who pays tuition access to their class in the library?
No, they're not allowed, but unfortunately they have kind of taken over that little area right there. But is there any other entrance that your son can enter through?
No, they are barricading every area for him to get into. And with all due respect, why is that even tolerated? Like, why should a Jewish kid have to go to another entrance?
That's not, I don't know if I'm going to say it's tolerated, but unfortunately the police are not intervening with that right now. And this is coming from the university. So if you had any questions or concern, you would take it with the university itself.
So the university has taken a stance that they will not, in fact, allow or help Jewish students get to their classes, that this is going to be tolerated.
We've received a directive to not intervene at this time, yes.
And at what point, have they given a directive to you at what point you should intervene?
As far as right now, no.
Okay. Is there anything we can do as concerned parents about...
I would suggest contacting the chancellor's office or higher ups in the university with your concerns. I do have a phone number, but I don't know if they're going to have a different answer, but I can give you a phone number.
Yeah. Could you give me that number?
310.
Mm-hmm.
825.
Mm-hmm.
2563, and you can... ask your questions and express your concerns there and see if they have an answer for you.
Okay, lastly, just so I know, at what point does UCPD get involved? Because if my child's safety...
If your son needs police assistance, then he, of course, he can contact us.
So I'm calling and saying he needs police assistance to get into his class, that people aren't letting him into his class.
We're not forcing them to move out of the area. That's what, if he's getting attacked or he has a police concern, then yes. But the fact that it's just locked off, they're not intervening with that right now.
So if he physically gets attacked, at that point, we should contact you. So you're allowing the protesters to block the Jewish students from going?
I'm not allowing it.
Yeah.
The school is saying that they will not be removed at this time.
Okay. Thank you so very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
Can you imagine? Can you even imagine? There were pictures. David Asman sent out a great picture yesterday, and it had students at, well, excuse me, I keep going, Nazis at one of the colleges here linking arms in front of doors to keep Jewish students from being able to go into a building. And right next to it was Hitler Youth, or the SS, in their little shorts and their brown uniforms, and they're standing in front of the steps of a building, on the steps, to prevent Jews from entering a building. And we're like, yeah, well, you know, can your son go in a different entrance? Really? When did this become acceptable? Now, there is some good news, and I want to make sure I get to this, because I think, and I want to put this out there, we have a guest coming up, but we'll talk about this more on the other side of the guest. I think that one of what we're starting to see across this country is young men, high school, college-aged men, especially white young men, who are very conservative, and they know what's right. And I think that they've gone this way. I think the pendulum has swung this way because they've been told their entire lives that being a white male is the lowest of the low that you can possibly be. You're dirt on someone's shoe if you're a white male. You're a misogynist, you're racist just because of the color of your skin, because you're a male, you have toxic masculinity. Everything that they do as boys is bad and terrible and horrible. So they've been told up until now that they're bad people, that what they do is terrible. So they're pushing back against it now. And I go to a post by a young man named Guillermo Estrada, and he's on X at Estrada Guillermo, and he says, and he posts some pictures, and you've probably seen them. He said, "Today was a sad yet empowering day at Chapel Hill, North Carolina. When I walked to class, I saw the Palestinian flag raised on our quad flagpole and was immediately upset at the act that these, quote, protesters had made. I cannot say I'm fully educated on the Israel-Palestine conflict, but it upset me that my country's flag was disrespected in order to advocate for another. Shortly after, Chancellor Roberts came with police officers to hang the flag once again. They were met with profanity, middle fingers, thrown bottles, rocks, and water. When the flag was raised once again, the Greek community began singing the national anthem. As the chancellor left, the quad erupted into chaos as protesters began removing the flag once again, preparing to destroy it. My fraternity brothers and others ran over to hold it up in order for it to not touch the ground. People began throwing water bottles at us, rocks, sticks, calling us profane names. We stood for an hour defending the flag so many fight to protect. My parents started a new life in the United States, a country that has helped them flourish and raise two kids. I grew up in a military community and saw firsthand the sacrifices they make. I will not stand for the disrespect these, quote, protesters cause for the sake of another country. My LDOC will be memorable, my last day on campus will be memorable in knowing that my fraternity brothers and others fought to keep the flag up. But it will also be memorable. Okay. In knowing that so many yearn to disrespect it. And you also saw on the University of Texas, I believe, Austin, a bunch of Greeks, young men, come out and help them throw the tents, clear the encampment up, and throw it all in a dumpster. Get rid of it all. Personally, I'd love to see them keep those tents and give them to like homeless people or something along those lines, or student, you know, kid groups, you know, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts who want to go camping. But they came out and helped. You're starting to see that, and I think it's happening because these young men have been taught that they're nothing, and that's what's happening. And now you see them standing for an hour while kids throw water on them and throw bottles at them and all this other stuff. And they're saying, no, wrong is wrong. And I'm going to sit here and I'm going to defend the flag and I'm going to hold it up so it doesn't touch the ground and you're not taking it down. Or helping the police and saying, yeah, we're clearing out this encampment. This is my campus too. Out it goes. 1-800-922-6680. And to me, this brings yet another rift in the Democrat Party. Is young men who, you know, young women are crazy liberal. They're liberal. Way to the left. Nutty liberal. And they're gone. There's nothing you can do about it. I don't know how you fix that. But the young men are going in the opposite direction. And the Democrats are losing them as well. 1-800-922-6680. Wayne, hang on. I will get to you next. We've got Wayne, and I've got some audio for you as well, coming up next on The Rob Carson Show. That was the young men from Pi Kappa Phi who defended the flag at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, who kept it from hitting the ground and wouldn't let the terrorists take it down. And in a fun little development, a GoFundMe has been set up to throw a rager for the Pi Cap guys at UNC who defended the flag. And they've gotten $37,000, over $37,000. It says, commie losers across the country have invaded college campuses to make dumb demands of weak university administrators. But amidst the chaos, the screaming, the anti-Semitism, the hatred, the faith, and the flag, stood a platoon of American heroes, armored in vineyard vines in Patagonia, fueled by Zin and White Claw. These triumphant bohemians protected Old Glory from the unwashed Marxist horde, laughing at their shrieks and wails and shielding the stars and stripes from Soviet missiles. These boys, no, men of the UNC Chapel Hill Pi Kappa Phi gave the best to America and now they deserve the best. Help us raise funds to throw this frat the party they deserve, a party worthy of the boat-shoed proletariat who did their country proud. Unbelievable. Unreal. Let's go to Wayne in Ellicott City. Wayne, you're on the Rob Carson Show. Welcome.
Thanks for taking my call, Mary.
Sure.
I can't believe that we have not called a special counsel against George Soros. Bring him in and question him. Because all of these flags, these tents, these megaphones that these people talk through, that's funded. That's funded by him. And the companies that he funds, makes or sells these things, we should go to those companies and investigate them.
If he's selling them and he's buying, if they're selling them and he's legally buying them, you can't go after the company for selling a legal product to someone. You can't go after them. But it's not just the Soros Foundation. There are others. Someone said the Rockefeller. Now, don't take that. I thought someone had mentioned the Rockefeller fund also donates to some of these organizations that have been accused of organizing these protests. So. And I don't quote me on that, but there are others. It's not just George Soros. But yeah, the problem is they hide the money. They're very good. They hide the money like Hillary Clinton and you know, Bill Clinton with the Haiti fund. Right. So that's part of the problem.
And some of these protesters, they're definitely paid. They're not all students.
Oh, yeah.
From in the school. You're not going to get the average student in there to organize and do what they're doing. And they're not doing anything about it that I can see.
No, but remember, our current vice president shilled for the bail fund for the Black Lives Matter protesters, remember?
Yeah.
To bail them out. So
anyway,
it's very hard to do that. Thank you so much. I think it's a great idea. I appreciate you joining us and listening to me on the Rob Carson Show, joining us here. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Wade. But yeah, our vice president was shilling to bail out the Black Lives Matter protesters. No blowback on that whatsoever. And to Wayne's point, I kind of think like we already know where the money's coming from. The IRS knows if you don't declare, you know, $11 somewhere. That happened to me for real. When I was a kid, I was fresh out of college. My dad was doing my taxes and I get transferred and I'm living in Fort Worth, Texas in this tiny little weird pre-furnished apartment with a bunch of students around me. And the IRS, I got audited because my father made an error, you know, rounding error or math error somewhere along the line. And I owed them $11. They came after me for $11. So you want to tell me that they don't know who's funding these protests? They don't know the flow of money for this? Because I'm going to call BS. They do know the flow of money. They don't want to stop it. And the Republicans, God bless them. This is why I'm not a registered Republican, because I don't play with people who don't want to win. I'm not playing for a team where the people on the other players on the team really don't want to win. I just think that there are a large number of uniparty members on the Republican side. And I'm all for working across the aisle. I'm all for that. I think it's necessary. However, when one side's always compromising and the other side's always getting what it wants, that's not working together in my book. But Republicans don't want to hear it. They don't want to do what they're supposed to do. So, but some good news is coming out of some of these campuses. All right, some election news for you. There's supposedly going to be presidential debates, which I'm telling you, I will sit there with a big bowl of popcorn and several beers to watch Joe Biden debate. The Commission for Presidential Debates say they're going to stick to their original schedule. The Trump campaign had asked for events to be scheduled earlier, but they said, no, we're sticking to the schedule. The first presidential debate is scheduled for September 16th at Texas State University in San Marcos. The second debate is October 1st, so 2 weeks later. So they're jamming them all in September, October. October 1st in Petersburg, Virginia. And the third one will be held in Salt Lake City, October 9th. There is a VP debate scheduled for September 25th in Easton, Pennsylvania. But the Trump campaign is saying because they won't move up to the debates, they're doing a disservice to Americans who deserve to hear from both sides, from both candidates, before voting begins. And in some of these states, voting starts a month beforehand. And this is why when I hear the Republicans say, no, you got to vote early, you got to vote early, you got to get the votes in early. I don't understand that. I truly don't. Ballot harvesting, do they need to get on the ballot harvesting game? 100%. Yes, you do. You got to figure it out. You don't even have to figure it out. Just do what the Democrats do. They've already done it. They've laid the blueprint out for you. Just copy their work, right? We all know a kid in school who just copied someone else's work. Be that kid. Just copy his work. But those are the things. But this whole, you know, mailing in early because, you know, Democrats come in with all these ballots late, you know, mail-in ballots late. If Republicans all vote on Election Day or they vote early, doesn't that just tell the Democrats how many ballots they need to find or mail in late in the ensuing weeks? Why tip your hand? I don't know. And I did. I voted early. My husband and I voted early in local elections a year ago. And I kid you not. So we purposely picked, because you couldn't vote in our town early. So we purposely picked a town right near us that has a large legal population and they're very blue. So we'll go there because our votes will count. So we went over there and you voted in person. Fine. That night, we're out at our little local bar with our neighbors, and someone said to us, oh, because it was a school board election, and there are only three people running, and you pick three people, so there you go. One, two, three. But there was apparently a write-in candidate, because one of the women, who I didn't know who she was, super liberal, everybody like, oh, I know the house she lives in, the Biden signs, the whole bit. But I didn't know, and I voted early. I got the information that I could have written in somebody else's name, like 5 hours after I voted early. So, you know, I don't know. I feel kind of burned with the early voting thing. And I know everybody's like, you know, Scott Pressler's a big fan of voting early. You got to vote early. You got to vote early. I don't know if I'm on that bandwagon. All right, coming up, Brianna Lyman will be joining us. She is with The Federalist, and we're going to talk about national election integrity efforts. Maybe she can tell me why I should vote early. Maybe she can tell all of us why we should vote early. That's next on The Rob Carson Show. Welcome back to the Rob Carson Show. I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Rob Carson. Joining us now on the Newsmax hotline is Brianna Lyman. She's an elections correspondent for The Federalist. Find her on X at Brianna Lyman and the number 2. Brianna, welcome to the show. Great to talk to you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. So, well, I said this when we opened the show, is that with all this craziness that's going on college campuses, because apparently now every 4 years we have rioting of some sort, we have a summer of love. So the next will be the summer of 2028 will be the next summer of love. That no one's paying attention really to election integrity. No one's paying attention to efforts, you know, among states to, you know, maintain the lack of a voter ID because that's somehow racist, which I think that the idea that black people can't obtain IDs is in and of itself racist. And the other things that are going on, you know, being able to vote for weeks and weeks and weeks. I'm going to start off with a question that we were just discussing. The right, you know, we're hearing a lot from Scott Pressler and others, and I love Scott, don't get me wrong, but you know, you got to vote early. You know, Republicans have to start voting early. I don't see how that changes things. You know, I did it. I voted early, and we wound up after we voted, voting for someone we didn't know who it was, but you know, it was 3 candidates, 3 spots open. So we voted for this person only to find out that she's super liberal and there was a writing campaign going on. Had I known that, I would never have voted for her, but I didn't find out until after I voted early. How is voting early a good thing?
Well, and, you know, like in your particular case, I would say to other voters, you know, it's important, not saying you didn't, but like it's important, obviously, to research, you know, the candidates well in advance, because there are deceptive campaigns out there from both sides of the aisle that mislead voters. And you're certainly not the first person that essentially fell victim to that. With early voting, though, in particular, I mean, take New York 3, for example, the special race that they had, I believe, back in February. There was a massive snowstorm that day. People were unable to get to the polls. And if you think about it like this, Democrats had the advantage. You know, they were capitalizing on these absentee mail-in ballots. So when election day came and there was a snowstorm and, you know, they couldn't shovel their cars out, or they didn't want to, you know, or they didn't want to shovel their cars out, they didn't have a concern. Republican voters then had to choose, well, do I want to try to get my car out of the snow and possibly get into an accident because of ice, or should I just sit this race out? And some of those voters probably chose to sit their race out. And that happens in the general election too, right? Whether it's a sick child, you're sick yourself, you get offered overtime and it's a bad economy and you need it, they lose the opportunity to then have their voices heard because they waited until election day.
That is an excellent point. That's an excellent point. But in my little town, which is 1.1 square miles, I can walk there in the snow, should that necessary. So that's a good point. My feeling with the whole thing is, like, why would you let the Democrats know how many votes they have to make up and find that and mail in, you know, in the middle of the night, 2 weeks after the polls closed? That's the thing about it that bothers me. I'm like, I actually think Republicans should start voting late with mail-in ballots because they love to bring those in at the last minute. And it would totally throw the Democrats off their game. There was a big court decision in Pennsylvania, and a lot of these rules that were made during the pandemic, the changes to voting, were made during the pandemic, and they didn't pass through their state legislatures as required by law. Yet somehow they're being allowed to stand, which I don't understand. But there was a big court decision in Pennsylvania. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, so this is actually a huge win for Republicans, and it's a huge upset for someone like Mark Elias, who pushed the Russia collusion hoax and has worked, with so much effort to essentially upend any kind of system of election integrity that we have in the United States and individual states. But basically, a bunch of left-wing organizers, during the 2020 election, the state had passed universal mail-in ballot in 2019, and part of their legislation said, look, if you submit a mail-in ballot, you have to appropriately date the envelope on the outside. Not hard to do at all, right? But during the 2020 election, people were either sending in ballots that had no dates, they were had the wrong dates, all of these other, you know, other issues with the marking. And the, you know, Republicans said, okay, well, these can't be counted. But Democrats said, oh, no, they have to be counted, right? All these ballots have to be counted. And it made its way through the court. And what we now know is that those ballots were violating state law. Those are ballots that were counted that were in violation of state law, a.k.a. they were illegal ballots. And left-wing activists tried to appeal a recent decision that said, look, you know, in November, if you submit a ballot and it has the wrong dates on the outside or it's missing a date, it's not going to be counted. And they wanted to overturn that. But luckily, the third U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals said no. The state law specifically says that ballots must be marked appropriately with the date. And if a ballot doesn't have those things, then it's invalid. And this is a huge win for election integrity because you have judges saying that the absorption of legislative authority in 2020 is not permissible.
Yeah, and what this was one of those, well, this was actually passed through the state legislature, so this was not one of those rules that was just willy-nilly, you know, the governor said or the head of elections or whoever just changed the rules to make universal ballots, you know, mail-in ballots acceptable. So this is a little bit different in that case. Mark Elias, by the way, I don't think he's a good person. I'm just going to say that.
You're right.
He just comes across as one of those guys that I wouldn't buy a car from. So now this went through the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. Does this go up higher now? Are we going to see them take this to the Supreme Court?
I don't think they have a leg to stand on from the Supreme Court. You know, originally the court had actually ruled that the requirement we're speaking about was in violation of the materiality provision from the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which essentially says that a voter cannot have their vote denied if there's a paperwork issue that's not actually like material in determining whether they're qualified, right?
Right.
The Supreme Court heard a case in 2022 and they tossed that out. They said that doesn't count, which is why this particular case ended up back in the Court of Appeals and local courts. So I don't know what they would appeal, what grounds they would essentially appeal on to the Supreme Court when the Supreme Court has already ruled that, you know, this does not get covered by the materiality provision. And the Third Circuit Court of Appeals has said with good argument that, you know, the materiality provision stops at the door in terms of whether someone is qualified to vote, not how they can vote.
Interesting. Okay. So but that doesn't stop Mark Elias. I mean, I got to give them credit. Democrats are tenacious. So I got to give them credit in that respect. Are there any other states that you know of? Because if I remember correctly, during the 2020 election, in the aftermath of the 2020 election, a couple of states got together to sue states that allowed, you know, all of these ballots to be counted, that were counting ballots that came in, you know, in the middle of the night, 2 weeks after the election. And there were a lot of questions about, you know, that were basically violating their own laws. And they did it just by fiat. And they didn't follow their own state constitution. So there were some lawsuits, I believe Texas sued, the states got together. Do you know if anything ever came of any of those lawsuits? I've heard nothing that ever came of any of them. And because they sued saying, well, you know, if you just don't have any laws and you just count anything that walks through the door and you violate your own rules, you're violating our state's votes by doing that. Anything happen?
Yeah, I believe the case you're referring to was the, I think it was, 19 states that signed on. This was after the November results were called. And I could have sworn the Supreme Court essentially just rejected hearing that case. So I don't know if there's been anything in the interim, but the logic there was 100% accurate in that if a state like, for instance, Pennsylvania, where, you know, you had Kathy Buchvar, who was the Secretary of State at the time, she said, okay, if your ballot comes in late, your mail-in ballot, we're still going to count it. And again, Republicans said, you can't count a ballot that's late because state law says otherwise. And she said, well, I'm going to do it anyway. The Supreme Court steps in and they say, you can't do that. You have to keep those ballots separate until we rule on it. So she says, all right, I'll listen to the Supreme Court. And then 2 days later, she says, you know what? I'm going to keep the ballots separate, like the Supreme Court told me to, but I'm going to count them anyway. And then if the Supreme Court steps in and says they're not valid, I'll just, you know, detract them from the tally. And that obviously never happened because by the time it made its way to the Supreme Court, I think it was February of the following year, they said it was moot. And Texas and other states are absolutely right to say that those ballots that we never got an answer on do take away from legal ballots cast in states that do have election security measures in place. Because like I just mentioned with the lawsuit we spoke about, those ballots that were missing the date, that were incorrectly postmarked, that were counted, are now, we're being told, well, those were invalid. But yet they were counted. They were counted in 2020, right? They impacted the election outcome. And that's a real travesty if that is allowed to happen this November.
Well, but that's the point. That's the name of the game, right?
Yep.
You do it anyway, because they know no one, we know no one's going to be held accountable. Right. No one is ever held accountable for anything unless they have on a red MAGA hat, and then which case, or their name is Donald Trump. And then they are held accountable for laws they didn't even break and laws that don't exist. So she was smart in what she did. And this is why I say Democrats play smarter than Republicans. You know, she did what, you know, she knew it would help her side. And she knew darn well that those ballots shouldn't have been counted. But she also knew that nothing was going to happen if she did count them. So, you know, smart for her. I hate it, but good for her. Speaking of the election, the Presidential Debates Commission, we were just talking about this before we went to the break, they're going to stick to their original debate schedule, with the first debate being September 16th, and then they go to October 9th. Are there any states that would be having voting before October 9th?
Yeah, I believe there's about 11 states. You know, first of all, Pennsylvania will be sending out their mail-in ballots on the day of the first presidential debate, if I have that down right, which I believe I do. So those voters, you know, if they cast their ballot in the morning, like let's say they cast it at 12 o'clock and then they watch the debate later that night, suddenly they might say, I made the wrong decision, right? And you'll have 11 states in between the first and second debate who will have sent those ballots out. And again, let's say you're someone who didn't have the opportunity to watch the first debate because of a work obligation. And let's say you just don't have access to, you know, YouTube or the internet. You know, there still are people out there that aren't glued to their phones. They don't have the ability to then, by the time the second debate comes around, say, oh, wait, I forgot about the first one. Let me send my mail-in ballot back. They're just going to be sending their ballots in. And I will note that in 2020, you know, Delaware, for instance, they changed their laws because of the pandemic, and they moved their absentee ballots, the timeline that they were being sent out, ahead of the first debate. And that's concerning, obviously, for the reasons I just mentioned. But even states that had ballots being sent out before the pandemic came around, before presidential debates, i.e. North Carolina, we saw such a balloon of mail-in ballots between 2016 and 2020 that I think a lot of voters, unfortunately, didn't have all the facts at hand. And, you know, I say that when you think about the Hunter Biden laptop story. Polls came out later, and it showed that people said, oh, well, if I would have known about the Hunter Biden laptop story, if big tech didn't censor it, I wouldn't have voted for Biden, right? So it's the same kind of idea. If they don't have all the information, their vote might have been different.
But again, that's the game. That's the game. It's being done purposely. I want to ask you, I know we don't have a lot of time left. I'll break quickly, Brian. He's going to start yelling at me. what's happening in Ohio and Louisiana, the Democrat convention, where they nominate their presidential and vice presidential candidates, is going to be held too late to get the names on the ballots in Ohio and Louisiana. Now, though they knew when those deadlines were, but yet they still scheduled their nominating the convention to be after those deadlines. Do we see Joe Biden not being on the ballot in those two states, or where Republicans go, all right, we'll give you a free pass?
Yeah, this whole thing is really interesting to me. I got to be honest, I'm still a little confused about how this is working behind the scenes. I do believe that Joe Biden will end up on the ticket, and even if he doesn't end up on the ticket, first of all, Ohio was not a state that I think Joe Biden realistically had in his wheelhouse for winning for his electoral college path, nor Louisiana. But I think enough Democrats will then write Joe Biden in. So I don't think it's actually a massive concern in the end.
Okay. I still to this day, I'm still clinging on to he's not going to be the nominee. So I thought
one
maybe there was
hope.
No, I want him to be the nominee. Right? Right? Because if they throw Michelle Obama in there, Donald Trump's screwed.
No, I think she's too. I think someone like her, Kamala Harris, she's too far left to capture independence. I think Joe Biden is the last wing of the so-called moderate Democratic Party.
Yeah. There's so much more to ask you about, but we're out of time. I'm so bummed. RFK Jr. got on the ballot in California. He says he's going to get on all 50. We know that hurts Joe Biden more so than it does Trump. But the American Independent Party is the one that is doing this. What do we know about them? Do you know anything about them?
I'm not particularly too informed about that particular group. But what I will say about RFK as a third-party candidate is we take for granted that he will take votes away from Joe Biden. But I will caution that there are a lot of conservatives that still are mad about 2020 and the lockdowns, and they do in part blame Donald Trump. And in swing states like North Carolina, where Trump won by less than 2 percentage points, don't think for a minute that there aren't conservatives out there who say, well, RFK is anti-vaccine, I'm anti-vaccine, Donald Trump with Operation Warp Speed. So there's a real concern that he could pull from both sides.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I know somebody like that. I know someone like that. Donald Trump. I was like, really? Okay. And you can't argue with them because they're just operating on emotion and they're voting for personality and not policy, which makes my head want to explode. So I have to walk away from those conversations because I just can't. There's just not enough alcohol and Valium in the world to make my head not hurt when it comes to those things. So, Brianna, thank you so much for joining me. I wish I had more time with you because I wanted to get into Jack Smith's unlawful election meddling accused by Elise Stefanik. But I know I'll have to tell everybody about it here. And thank you so much for joining me. You can follow her on X at Brianna Lyman 2, the number 2. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. If you want to jump in, 1-800-922-6680. And I'll tell you about Jack Smith's alleged election meddling. Coming up on The Rob Carson Show. Yes. I'm Mary Walter in for Rob Carson on The Rob Carson Show. All right. You can help out some of the people who were devastated by the tornadoes that ripped through the Midwest. And one of them is the place where Rob grew up called Minden, Iowa. And just go to GoFundMe and just type in Minden, Strong, M-I-N-D-E-N. It's a town of approximately 600 people. The tornado destroyed over 40% of the homes and businesses. And if you follow Rob on X, he went there and he took some videos. It's just absolutely heartbreaking. So if you want to help them out, Minden, Strong, M-I-N-D-E-N on GoFundMe. So what I was just talking about here about Jack Smith and Elise Stefanik urging a probe into his unlawful election meddling. She filed an ethics complaint against him on Tuesday. She alleges that his campaign being rushed against former President Donald Trump is the same as election interference. And she said that because he's trying to rush it, she argues that Smith is attempting to rush the trial of Trump in violation of the DOJ's own manual, their justice manual. The manual stipulates federal prosecutors may never select the timing of any action for the purpose of affecting any election or for the purpose of giving an advantage or disadvantage to any candidate or political party. And she says he violated the statute in August of 23 when he petitioned the court for a January 2nd, 2024 trial date. And then she cites the roughly 13 million pages of discovery that he gave Trump's team to review with no time to do it, along with other evidence, and said that his intended 5-month turnaround was an obvious attempt to rush a complex case to get a judgment before Election Day. So good for her. I give her a lot of credit. GOP needs more women. Coming up, I'm going to try to get Mike and Luz Delaware in here on The Rob Carson Show. Welcome back to The Rob Carson Show. We're going to quickly go to Mike and Luz Delaware because I got a minute. Mike, welcome.
Hey, I had a minute. Okay. First of all, I'd like to get the name of that fraternity again, but you can give that to me later.
I can tell you right now, it's Pi Kappa Phi.
Okay, Pi Kappa Phi.
Pi Kappa Phi.
Pi Kappa Phi, okay.
Yeah.
Let's change that GoFundMe to pay their student loans, because people who are in fraternities don't need their loans paid for, and that would definitely give the left a punch in the gut.
It's interesting. Also, that. Go ahead, quickly.
Also, I'm from Lewis, Delaware.
Oh, Lewis, I'm sorry.
It's a Scandinavian pronunciation, and I'm 4 miles from the plug.
Okay, gotta go. Love to hang on. And by the way, they are up to 51,000 in that GoFundMe. More coming up on The Rob Carson Show.
Hey guys, it's Carson. Our money loses value every year due to inflation. In fact, the dollar has lost over 98% of its value relative to gold. What if you could earn income in gold, which can't get inflated away, instead of dollars? Monetary Metals does just that. They offer the ability to earn income in gold, growing your total ounces over time by leasing or loaning your gold to qualified gold-using businesses. Earn 2 to 5% annually on your gold while supporting qualified businesses in the gold industry. Or if you're an accredited investor, you could earn even higher yields, double digits, in their gold bond offerings. You can open an account directly on Monetary Metals website in less than 15 minutes. Fund your account by purchasing gold directly from Monetary Metals at less than 1% over spot, or you can use gold you already have. They provide free shipping and insurance and free storage and insurance for any metal in your account. Opt out of the dollar, central bankers, fiat currency, the corrupt financial system, and get your own personal gold standard with Monetary Metals. Visit monetary-metals.com/Carson for more information. Again, monetary-metals.com/Carson for more information or to get started opening your account.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Is the Rob Carson Show.
Yes, Rob Carson Show with me, Mary Walter. I'm just, think of me as Rob in a dress. I don't have the comedy element the way Rob does down. He's got that down, so I don't even try to be Rob. 1-800-922-6680 is my number. You can find me on X at Mary Walter Radio. There's no S in that. It's Mary Walter Radio. My podcast is live on Tuesdays. It is live on YouTube and on Getter. Just look for Mary Walter Radio. Again, no S. And you can go back and watch. Rob's been on the podcast with me, so you can go back to YouTube and you can wade through. Oh gosh, there's probably over 100 videos now of different podcasts with all sorts of different guests, from Rob Carson to James Rosen to Sean Spicer, Cal Thomas, a whole bunch more. So it's a lot of fun. Sometimes we don't have any guests, and it's just you, viewers, and you get to comment. And then the audio is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Again, look for Mary Walter Radio. Are you tired of woke services? We're all tired of woke services, right? Like Netflix and Disney Plus and Hulu and more. You need to get Newsmax Plus. It is the fastest growing streaming service in America. With Newsmax Plus, you'll get the Newsmax channel and Newsmax 2, the newest network. You can watch their great shows with Rob Schmidt, Greta Van Susteren, Greg Kelly, Eric Bolling, and more. And you get real news, informed opinion, and the most cutting analysis from Dick Morris, Carrie Lake, Alan Dershowitz, Mike Huckabee, Victor Davis Hanson, and so many more. President Trump says Newsmax Plus is terrific. So bypass the big media and get the Newsmax channels, great documentaries with actor John Voight, and much, much more. They even cover live all the big Trump rallies. They never censor President Trump like those big networks. So start your free trial today. Yep, it costs nothing to start. Go to NewsmaxPlus.com to register. Then you download the app and you just start watching. Millions are watching Newsmax. Be one of them. Go to NewsmaxPlus.com today. So let's go into some of this election, some of the election issues. We were just speaking with Brianna Lyman about election integrity. And this little ditty came out. And we know that there was coordination based on emails that were received under a FOIA Act, I believe, by Judicial Watch, that there was coordination. There were emails that went back and forth between the White House, between Jack Smith, the White House, NARA, and the GSA, and the DOJ, regarding Trump's documents. This was all before before they charged him, and before the raid. Now, the GSA, which is the General Services Administration, they're the ones who pack up all your stuff when you're president and you're leaving. They're the ones who come and do it. You're president, you don't have to do that for yourself. So they do it. And they were in talks with Trump's team both during and after his term regarding pallets of items from the president's tenure as president. The GSA informed Trump's transition team that there were 6 pallets that needed to be transferred from Virginia to Florida. All right. Of the 6 pallets, 2 were supposed to go to Mar-a-Lago and 4 to a West Palm Beach storage unit, according to the emails. The two pallets to be delivered to Mar-a-Lago were from an Arlington, Virginia facility and contained, quote, document boxes, according to an email previewing the shipping. All right. Kathy Geisler is the director of the Office of Portfolio Management and Real Estate's Program Executive Division. Sounds very important. And in the email, she says, this is August 26th of 2021. I understand that we're ready to ship. Now, this email included a Trump aide as a recipient on this email. It said, I know that originally we had 3 pallets going to the storage unit. That is now 4 pallets going to the storage unit. 2 pallets will go to Mar-a-Lago. Now, previously in July, the month before, letter from Kathy Harrison, Trump's aide, Bo Harrison, from him stated the items to be shipped from Arlington, Virginia to Palm Beach, Florida were, quote, required to wind down the office of the former president or are items that are property of the federal government. Okay. It's unclear how long those pallets sat in the Virginia facility or who had access to them. An FBI agent said during a witness interview that the GSA was in possession of 6 pallets and that the office, quote, contacted the office of 45, the president, Donald Trump, to inform that, you know, they have to go. Someone has to pick them up or they have to be shipped, something to that effect. Now, the Trump administration already knew they had federal documents in them and said so. The National Archives and Records Administration, NARA, was also involved in the transition, but by June of 21, a month earlier, NARA archivist Dave Ferrero had become frustrated by the pace of the good faith efforts by Trump's team to address NARA's concern. So that's June. July, Trump's aide sends a letter stating that the items to be shipped were required to wind down the office of the former president or are items that are property of the federal government. So you think the federal government would just keep them. Why ship them to Mar-a-Lago? And then in August, you have this woman send an email to several people, including one of Trump's aides, saying, I know we originally had 3 pallets going to the storage unit. That's now 4, and 2 go to Mar-a-Lago. So that doesn't make a lot of sense. The Federalist asked NARA whether the pallets shipped by the GSA included the documents that were later confiscated by Jack Smith's team during their raid of Mar-a-Lago. And NARA's media staff responded that the agency, quote, had no awareness about the contents of the materials on the pallets and no involvement in the MOVE project that is referenced in the GSA emails. So basically, there were these pallets and they were just sitting around. And this is the summer of 2021. And apparently this is when all the emails were going back and forth between the White House and the National Archives and the DOJ and everybody. And these pallets were just sitting around. And they're like, no, you got to get them out of here. We got to get these to Mar-a-Lago. Now, according to, let's see, Kelly. I've got to figure out who Kelly is here. Sorry about that. But anyway, I'll find out who Kelly was. Oh, Julie Kelly. Duh, Julie Kelly. According to Julie Kelly, she's on the inside of all of this, by the way. According to Kelly, she said, NARA was harassing Trump throughout 2021 for what they insisted were government records without contacting the GSA to search the boxes that they had. So the GSA had these boxes, these pallets of boxes. And NARA wanted, apparently, these documents. And they're asking the Trump administration for these documents. We want these documents, All they had to do was go to the GSA and ask them, hey, do you have these boxes? Which they had on pallets in Virginia. But instead, we're insisting on shipping to Trump. So the question that's making the rounds now is, well, what was in those boxes? And is that what they then used as an excuse because they didn't get those? We were missing these documents. So they raided Trump. They raided Mar-a-Lago. They were there for like 14 hours at Mar-a-Lago. You know, oh, Trump's got all these classified documents. But were they in those boxes that the GSA had in their possession and wound up shipping to Trump that NARA was looking for? They didn't talk to each other? It's kind of weird, right? Or is that par for the course for the government? But either way, that shouldn't result in a raid on Mar-a-Lago, especially when they knew Joe Biden had documents. He knew he had documents. He shared some classified information with his biographer, with his writer, his ghostwriter. And, you know, oh, no, nothing to see here. So I just had to share that with you. Jim Jordan, there's a guy named Michael Colangelo I'm going to tell you about coming up. So I'm going to take a little bit of an early break here because he's involved in this case out of the Southern District of New York with Alvin Bragg. And it's interesting because he's the lead prosecutor. His name is Matthew Colangelo. Colangelo. And he is now the lead prosecutor, as I said, in this Manhattan criminal case. But here's the thing. He used to work for the Biden DOJ, and then he switched jobs and just happened to go to the Southern District of New York to lead the prosecution of Joe Biden's political opponent. Nothing to see here, right? It gets deeper and deeper and dirtier and stinkier. And I got the stink here for you, and I will share it with you, and I'll tell you what's going on. And Jim Jordan's going to investigate. Big deal, right? But Jim Jordan's going to investigate. I'll tell you a little bit more about this guy and also what Jonathan Turley has to say about all of this coming up on The Rob Carson Show. Welcome back to The Rob Carson Show. 1-800-922-6680 is my number. I'm Mary Walter sitting in for Rob. So Jim Jordan sent a letter yesterday to Merrick Garland, the attorney general, regarding this guy, Matthew Colangelo, who's the lead prosecutor for the criminal case in Manhattan against Donald Trump. Now, the Daily Caller got a copy of the letter before it was sent. And in the letter, Jordan demands a number of personnel files related to the hiring of Colangelo, his employment and his termination at the DOJ, and a number of documents and communications from between January 21st to December 22, and documents and communications related to Trump or his organization. Now, this guy Colangelo spent 2 years serving in the DOJ as acting associate attorney general. Then he joined the Manhattan District Attorney's Office as senior counsel in December of 22. So Jordan wants to know more detail as to why Colangelo left the DOJ to work on the prosecution of Trump. This guy just happens to go to the Southern District of New York and just happens to wind up on the prosecution of Trump case. Weird how that happens. He was appointed in 22 while Bragg was still investigating Trump. In the letter, Jordan writes, the Committee on the Judiciary is conducting oversight of politically motivated prosecutions by state and local officials. New York District Attorney Alvin Bragg is engaged in one such politicized prosecution, which is being led in part by Matthew B. Colangelo, a former senior Justice Department official. And accordingly, given the perception that the Justice Department is assisting in Bragg's politicized prosecution, we write to request information and documents related to Mr. Colangelo's employment. I haven't had, you know, the Republicans do a lot of investigating. Nothing really ever seems to come out of it. They find stuff and that's how far it goes. So I don't have high hopes. Matthew Colangelo oversaw the voting section of the DOJ, which reportedly coordinated with a former affiliate of the Association of Community Organizations for Reform. Now, you know who they are? Remember Acorn from back in Barack Obama days? Remember them? Acorn? And they wound up in a whole bunch of trouble or weren't doing things exactly by the book. So he oversaw that the voting section of the DOJ, he coordinated with that group, Acorn. Judicial Watch in 2011 got documents that suggested that the Project Vote organization had high-level access to the voting system of the DOJ under Obama. A report on the findings characterized the documents as revealing how far-left-wing civil rights groups work against Republican or conservative candidates by attempting to leverage law enforcement against them. And Colangelo D'Angelo is listed among the high-level DOJ officials that the group had access to. Again, deeper and deeper, dirtier and dirtier, and stinkier and stinkier. The Project Vote group appears to have recommended hires to the voting section and have directed voting section resources against conservatives who were trying to combat voter fraud. So in other words, they had access to the guy in the DOJ who now is prosecuting Trump, and they were coordinating to prevent, to go after conservative groups because the conservative groups were trying to prevent voter fraud. Colangelo is reported to have used the voting section to block state integrity, election integrity laws on multiple occasions during the Obama administration. He went after voter ID in South Carolina. He blocked that measure. And Brett Kavanaugh later ruled that he acted unlawfully in that. So he was slapped down. So now he's prosecuting Trump. Multiple employees of Acorn, which Project Vote was formerly affiliated, were convicted of crimes related to voter registration fraud during the George W. Bush and the Obama administrations. So this guy's a real peach. He's a real one here. We like him, right? So I'm sure they'll get to the bottom of it, but it's going to be late. Now, I want to quickly go to cut one. This is Jonathan Turley talking about the judge this trial, Judge Marchand, who is ruling over this trial. And I'll let Jonathan Turley explain what he's talking about here. Just listen.
It's bad enough when you bring in a person's own counsel to testify against him. But Michael Cohen is literally going to tell that jury, please send my client to jail for following my legal advice. All of the stuff that they're talking about, he set up. He structured this, and he told his client that we could do this. And it's a bizarre moment. But I got to tell you, I think this judge may have already committed reversible error. Now, he could try to amend it. He could try to change it in his instructions. But that jury has now been told repeatedly that there are federal election crimes here, strongly suggesting that the payment to Stormy Daniels did violate federal election laws. Sure. That's just not true.
Yeah. So what he's talking about is the prosecution is going to call for Donald Trump's former lawyer, attorney, Michael Cohen, is going to be a witness for the prosecution. Because, you know, he's going to say that Donald Trump told me to do it. But yet all of these other witnesses are saying, well, that's not true. And now they're going to have to prove that it was some kind of election fraud, which they haven't been able to do. And the FEC said there was no election fraud here, that this is a bookkeeping error. Now, Jonathan Steinglass is a prosecutor with the Manhattan District's Attorney's Office, and he was questioning a guy who was questioning a lawyer. Stormy Daniels' manager called this lawyer in 2011 to complain that, quote, some jerk had called her up threatening to sue her over a blog post, all right? And so the prosecuting attorney calls this guy, Keith Davidson, on the stand, and he said to him, he asks him, he said, I hate to ask it this way, but who was that jerk? And the prosecution witness says, Michael Cohen. Yet they're relying on Michael Cohen's testimony, the prosecution, to you know, get Trump. He's the star witness to get Trump. So they're trying to prove that Michael Cohen is credible because he's the one who's going to bury Trump. He's the one who's going to make the case for the prosecution to get Trump. And yet all of these witnesses have torn into Michael Cohen. They said he's difficult to work with, to the point where they wanted to avoid him. He said Davidson likened Cohen to the dog in the Disney movie Up, who is repeatedly distracted by squirrels. Davidson said he was highly excitable, sort of a pants on fire kind of guy. He had a lot of things going on. I'd frequently be on the phone with him and he'd take another call. And he'd be talking out of two ears. So Cohen paid the hush money to Daniels that the prosecutors are saying Trump unlawfully concealed. But yet we know when David Pecker testified, the guy from the National Enquirer, he said, I didn't deal with Trump at all on this. I dealt with Michael Cohen on this. So I never dealt with Trump on this. So it's not going well, but I just don't understand. I'm not a lawyer, but don't they always tell you, like, you should never call someone to the stand if you don't already know what they're going to say? My mother always used to say, don't ask questions you don't know the answer to, or you don't want the truth, like you don't want answered. And it's interesting, Davidson, who represented Daniels and other women, and another woman who was paid off, told Jewelers that Cohen created drama. He would make up excuses. He would contradict himself. Daniels and her manager, Stormy Daniels and her manager, were also repeatedly voicing frustration during the negotiations. They called Cohen a jerk, called him a name I can't say on the air. and even Michael Cohen's old banker testified earlier in the day and said that Cohen was handed off to him as a client because he was skilled at working with people who may be a little challenging. So I'm not quite sure how this is going to work out for them. It's going to be interesting to watch. I don't know about you, but I am. I was hoping that this would be televised so we could see Michael Cohen in person testifying, because it's going to be fantastic. I really think it's going to be fantastic. Okay, coming up, immigration. Now, this is kind of taken a back burner here to everything that's going on with all of the campuses around the country. But immigration ties into some of this, because Joe Biden's trying to appease both sides. And I think, and no matter what he does with this, he's not going to win. But I think this proposal is going to be a big losing proposal for Joe Biden, definitely a losing proposal for the rest of us. So that is coming up next on The Rob Carson Show.
Hey guys, it's Carson. You know, everybody knows the next medical crisis just around the corner. Whether it comes in the form of a pandemic or something more mundane like a tick bite, you and your family need to be prepared. That's where The Wellness Company comes in. The Wellness Company and their doctors are medical professionals that you can trust, and their new medical emergency kits are the gold standard when it comes to keeping you safe and healthy. Be ready for anything. This medical emergency kit contains an assortment of life-saving medications, including ivermectin and Z-Pak. From anthrax to tick bites to COVID, even a bioweapon like a plague, the Wellness Company medical emergency kit is exactly what you need to have on hand to be prepared. Rest assured knowing that you have emergency antibiotics, antivirals, antiparasitics on hand to make sure you and your family are safe from whatever the globalists throw at us next. Go to www.twc.health/Carson. Again, twc.health/Carson today and order. That's twc.health/Carson, and use the promo code Carson to save 10%.
Oh, yeah. I may just let this run. Ready? There we go. I'm Mary Walter. How are you? I hope you're having a great day. I'm sitting in for Rob Carson this week. You can join me at 1-800-922-6680. Reach out on X at Mary Walter Radio. I would love to hear from you. So let's talk a little bit about immigration. I want to take you back a little bit. I want to go back to 2023, just October, so not that long ago. In October of 2023, Jordan and Egypt declared that they will not accept Palestinian refugees, according to King Abdullah II. The Associated Press reported this is a situation that has to be handled within Gaza and the West Bank, according to that King Abdullah said that, in meeting with the German chancellor. He said, you don't have to carry this out on the shoulders of others. So you don't have to take these refugees in. Why should other people have to deal with this? These two parties have to work this out on their own. All right. Abdullah said the whole region is on the brink. This new cycle of violence is leading us towards the abyss. And now we know they're all in. They've been moved into Rafah. And we know that Egypt. So Egypt and Jordan are like, yeah, no mas, not coming. You're not crossing the border into our country. And they wanted them to work it out on their own. So fast forward to May 1st of 2024, right? From November, December, January, February, March, April, May, 7 months later. I had to count it out. And the Biden administration is now considering bringing certain Palestinians to the U.S. as refugees, according to an internal federal document obtained by CBS News. So apparently in the last couple of weeks, senior officials across several federal U.S. agencies have been discussing the practicality and the options that they have to resettle Palestinians from Gaza who have immediate family members who are American citizens or permanent residents. One of the proposals involves using the United States Refugee Admission Program in order to bring the Palestinians with U.S. ties in if they've managed to escape Gaza and are in Egypt. Top U.S. officials have also discussed getting additional Palestinians out of Gaza and processing them as refugees if they have American relatives. The plans would require coordination with Egypt, which has so far refused to welcome a lot of people from Gaza. Which is interesting here. Take a hot second to remember, there are still Americans trapped in Afghanistan, and the Biden administration's done squat to get them out. But, you know, these are Palestinian refugees, so he wants to buy votes. And what better way to get some votes from the Muslim population in this country than doing something like this? And the young people who are protesting on all these campuses make them happy and say, yeah, but look what I'm doing. I'm bringing Palestinian refugees to the U.S., so screw the American hostages in Afghanistan. Screw those Afghanis who helped the Americans when they were there and we promised them safe passage to the United States and they risked their lives to do it. To heck with them. We got to get us some Palestinian refugees here. They go to the front of the line. Those who pass a series of eligibility, medical, and security screenings would qualify to fly to the U.S. with refugee status, and that offers beneficiaries permanent residency, resettlement benefits like housing assistance, and a path to American citizenship. A White House spokesperson spoke with CBS News late last night and said the U.S. has helped more than 1,800 American citizens and their families leave Gaza, many of whom have come to the United States. At President Biden's direction, we have also helped and will continue to help some particularly vulnerable individuals, such as children with serious health problems and children who are receiving treatment for cancer, get out of harm's way and receive care at nearby hospitals in the region. So that means that, you know, their parents are coming too, and we're going to be paying for their health care. Just remember that, because I got something coming up on that, too. Now, the refugee program, the U.S. refugee program, was started in 1980 and since then has not resettled a large number of Palestinians. Over the past 10 years, the U.S. has resettled more than 400,000 refugees fleeing violence and war across the globe. Yet fewer than 600 were Palestinian. Now, to qualify, they have to prove they're fleeing persecution based on certain factors such as their nationality, their religion, or political views. Some Palestinians could say they are fleeing Hamas, but others could identify the military and the government of Israel, though, as the persecutor, which puts the Biden administration once again between a rock and a hard place, which I think is the one thing they do really, really well, is they put themselves between a rock and a hard place with alarming regularity. And they do it so seamlessly. Now, along the lines of immigration, remember that big bill that they passed to aid Ukraine and Israel with $0 for our border? Well, guess what was in there? It included $3.5 billion to open immigration offices in Muslim countries in order to supercharge mass migration from the Middle East. This is according to Republican Senator Eric Schmidt out of Missouri. They are opening the Doha field office May 7th and the Ankara field office on May 9th. With those, the USCIS will have 11 international field offices because we'll come to you. You want to emigrate to the United States? We'll come to you. No worries. Why should you have to travel and do that pesky paperwork? Let us do it for you. Other international field offices include Beijing, Guangzhou, China, Guatemala City, Havana, Mexico City, Nairobi, Kenya, New Delhi, San Salvador, El Salvador, and a place in Honduras whose name I cannot pronounce. This was part of the $95 billion military aid package for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. Again, $0 for the American border. But it does include $481 million to settle migrants in the U.S. because we want them to be comfy. And we want them to, you know, have a place to live and all that stuff. None of which my grandparents got when they immigrated here. They had to have a sponsor and they had to have jobs. And if they lost their jobs, they could be deported, etc. But they got nothing. They had to do it all on their own. So, you know, we're progressing. Now, this money goes to the Department of State, which then gives it to these NGOs to work with them. And who knows if the NGOs work within the guidance of the law. Biden's deputies are using the refugee program as an adjunct to their diversity, expanding equity migration policy. For example, they used the program in March to import 3,009 migrants from the countries of El Salvador and Guatemala, which are not considered unsafe countries. They're considered safe countries. But, you know, they really wanted to see Disney. So we said, sure, we'll bring into the country. No problem. And that's what we did. They are also using the refugee funds to expand migration routes from African and Muslim countries. 12,018 came from the Congo in March, 16,700 from Afghanistan, Syria, Pakistan, Iraq, and Eritrea, because what could possibly go wrong? We brought them in as well. So that's what the Biden administration is doing, you know, to make America more equitable when it comes to the people that are here. Now, those flights, when Biden was flying people around the country, want to know where they went? The top 15 cities that they flew into during an eight-month window of January through August of 2023, over 90,000 were flown into Miami, Florida. Over 60,000 were flown into Fort Lauderdale. 14,000, almost 15,000 into New York City. 8,000 into Houston, Texas, 6,000 into Orlando, 3,000 Los Angeles, 3,000 Tampa, 2,000 Dallas, 2,000 San Francisco, 1,000 into Atlanta, 1,000 into Newark, D.C. got 1,000, Chicago got a little under 500, and down the list it goes. So we now know exactly what they were doing and that, how to get that information via a FOIA Act, because they're so transparent and open about everything. And lastly, on immigration, illegal immigrants and the amount of money that they are costing taxpayers. And we know this because of Florida, because Ron DeSantis in May of last year, so it's been almost a year, he signed a Senate bill, 1718, and that Senate bill required healthcare providers to note if the patient is a legal citizen. Now, you can never do that in a blue state because they'll scream about it. Now, the purpose of the legislation was to figure out how much care for illegal aliens is costing taxpayers and hospitals after the illegals were found unable to pay for their care, which happens all over this country. They walk into an ER and there are hospitals that are going under because they can't afford it anymore. So they're just collapsing. But if you're a citizen and you can pay for your care or you have insurance or whatever, and there's an illegal there ahead of you, the illegal gets treated before you. They get the bed before you. And they ain't paying for it. And you sucker, are paying for it. They talk about Manatee Hospital in Florida. They that at a recent county meeting, the CEO of the hospital there noted that the hospital received $2.7 million in funding from the county in 2023. But they spent $21.2 million that same year on uninsured care costs predominantly to illegals, compared to $14 million 2 years prior. That's huge. That's a big increase. The state also reported in 2021, care for illegals across the state was about $312 million. Now, they estimate that number from 2021, $312 million, to 2023, $566 million in non-payment for healthcare to hospitals, physicians, etc. And if you're a doctor who has to take care of an illegal and you're not an employee of the hospital, like you're in private practice and you work at the hospital, you're required, if the hospital takes Medicare or Medicaid, you are required to do what they call ward care, and you rotate through ward care. And you can pay for nothing. You get paid zip. The doctors get paid zip for doing that. They get nothing. And it's considered charity care, but they're forced charity care, but they're not allowed to write it off their taxes either. As a loss. They're not allowed to write it off. Broward County lost more than $43 million so far in 2024. So far, in unpaid medical expenses for illegals. Duval County, $31 million. Hillsborough, $58 million. Orange, $58 million. Miami-Dade, $231 million just so far. The first 4 months of 2024. You have this going on in Arizona in 2020, between December 21 and November 22 in Yuma in Arizona, 26 million illegals who did not pay for services. So, this is why your medical bills cost so much, kids. Somebody's got to pay for it. This is why you see they charge me $18 for an aspirin. Who do you think's paying for all that free health care? 1-800-922-6680 or hit me up on X at Mary Walter Radio. We're going to wrap it up coming up here on The Rob Carson Show. You are killing me. You're killing me, Brian, with these songs. You're so good. Yes. All right. Well, since we're having another summer of love, you know, we got another summer of love going on here. By the way, if you want to jump in, now is the time. 1-800-922-6680. It looks like we're also going to have, we're having the election year rioting. So it looks like we may also have the election year pandemic. Did you see this? A bottlenose dolphin in Florida died from bird flu. Yeah, scientists from the University of Florida found that this particular bird flu victim, after they were notified of a dolphin that appeared to be in distress, but by the time they got to where it was already dead, it had died. And they did a necropsy following its death, and they found that it contracted a highly deadly strain of bird flu. Now, poultry and wild birds in the U.S. across the country have been falling victim to bird flu. It's a highly pathogenic avian influenza virus, and it's been going around since the end of 2021, you know, gearing up for the election year. But it has begun to spill over into cows and other mammals. So when they performed the necropsy on the dolphin, they identified inflammation in and around its brain and spinal cord. It tested negative for other infections, so they said, all right, let's do the bird flu one, you know. So they did. They found some evidence of the virus in the lungs, but most of it was in the brain and the tissue that covers the brain and the spinal cord. And this group of bird flus, it's called H5N1, has been blamed for killing sea lions in Peru and Chile and harbor and gray seals in New England and Canada. Though it's not exactly common for bird flu to kill seals and sea lions, it's also not rare. Now for cetaceans, that's the group that are dolphins and whales. Bird flu is rare. It has been found in common in dolphins in Peru, Wales, and England, two harbor porpoises in Sweden and England, and an Atlantic white-sided dolphin in Canada. They say the cases are few and far between, so they're not sure how this dolphin got it in Florida. I mean, who knows? There could have been a rager out at sea. Shortly before the dolphin died, there had been a bird die-off in the area that experts linked to this virus. But the genetic testing showed that the flu that caused the local bird outbreak was not exactly the same as the one that killed the dolphins. And the strain that the dolphin had genetic changes that made it 18 times more resistant to one of the antiviral drugs used to treat bird flu. So yeah, so here we go again. Get your masks out, not to protest. And apparently we're all going to die. Now, along those lines, dairy cattle, people who work with dairy cattle can now get the bird flu. So the government is collecting samples of ground beef at retail stores in states with outbreaks of bird flu in dairy cattle. But they say the meat supply is safe. They're confident that the meat supply in the U.S. is safe. They say federal officials are seeking to verify the safety of milk and meat after confirming the H5N1 virus in 34 dairy cattle herds in 9 states just since last March. And it crossed over to one person in Texas. And both the Center for Disease Control and the World Health Organization have said the overall public health risk is low. They also told us that COVID came from eating bat soup. So I take that with a grain of salt. That's just me. But it is higher if you have exposure to infected animals. They believe the outbreaks are more widespread in cows than officially reported because they found particles of H5N1 in 20% of milk supplies. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration said that the preliminary results, PCR tests that they use, show pasteurization, though, kills the bird flu virus in milk. That's important because I know people who like to go to the farm and get the unpasteurized milk. That might not be the good idea right now until they get a handle on this. The USDA is going to analyze ground beef samples with PCR tests to find out whether any viral particles are present in ground beef. Because when dairy cows age, they apparently grind them up. for beef when they're old. I know. It makes me cringe. So the USDA on Monday began requiring lactating dairy cows to test negative for bird flu before being moved across state lines because they're trying to contain the virus. Testing is not required for cows that are shipped over state lines directly to slaughter facilities because they inspect the animals. They have all these stopgap measures in place, so you don't have to worry as much. Now, they're going to do another study where they're going to cook ground beef containing a virus surrogate. So particles of this virus, not necessarily the full virus, but particles of it. And they're going to cook it at different temperatures to assess how it inactivates the virus. So they're going to find out what the internal temperature is that you have to cook meat to in order to kill the virus if it happens to be in your ground beef. So this makes me think that I'm probably just going to start a herd of cattle myself and just keep them away from birds. That doesn't make me feel good. Colombia has restricted the import of beef and beef products coming from U.S. states where dairy cows have tested positive for the bird flu as of April 15th, but there are no known cases of bird flu in beef cattle so far. So maybe that makes you feel a little bit better. Mm-hmm. I told you. The riot edition of the 2024 election already in full swing. It's going to be the pandemic version of the election coming up next. Hopefully not, though. Hopefully I'm wrong. I'm Mary Walter on The Rob Carson Show. All right. Wrapping it up here on The Rob Carson Show. I'm Mary Walter. I'll be back with you tomorrow, though. So please join me. I'd love to get to talk to you. Can hit me up on X at Mary Walter Radio. Just some good news. UCLA last night, Native Americans were standing up for Israel, and they had big signs that say no Hamas terrorists on American soil, on Native soil, which I thought was fantastic. And at Fordham, things are heating up. The rioters have ransacked the Lincoln Center there, and they're setting up tents inside because that's the kind of snowflakes that they are. And the tents are all exactly alike, and they're all brandy new, coming out of boxes, etc. So I just love that they're setting them up inside because they're that soft. All right. Have a wonderful day, everybody. And I will see you back here on The Rob Carson Show.